Welcome to the Spin Axis Podcast. I'm Eric Barzeski.
I'm Tyson Deskins.
And I'm Monty Scheinblum.
Yeah, on today's episode, we have Monty Scheinblum, who played on the Nike Tour, now known as the Korn Ferry Tour, and was also World Long Drive Champion back in 1992, and is a perennial on the Golf Digest Top Teachers list. Monty, thanks for taking some time.
Happy to be here.
I was actually alive in 1992, so that's cool.
Yeah, thanks. Make me feel old.
Same.
Yeah, it wasn't that long ago.
Yeah, but so many of the students we teach now, you know, they weren't.
No, they were born in 2012.
Right.
No kidding, right?
So we're going to talk about, in Monty's words, how awful so many golf instructors on social media are.
It's a crazy thing.
It's so brutal. The way that I look at it is, you know, I give a pass to like the old school guys, because they did, in fact, make people better 30 years ago with, let's just say, antiquated information.
Sure, absolutely.
Which was not antiquated at the time.
Correct. And you know what? I always say this. 5 years from now, I will look back at today and say, you know what? There are a few things I didn't understand in 2025.
Hopefully, right?
Yeah, see, exactly right. But I want to say it's like 70 to 80% of the stuff on social media is so horrendously awful. And the justification that these people have is there's more than one way to swing a golf club and I'm entitled to my opinion. And I'm like, well, I guess, you know, but if you want to say the best way to get from LA to New York City is to walk backwards, I'm going to say, yeah, you'll eventually get there, but it's a pretty terrible way to do it, you know, and getting back to the antiquated, you know, ideas, you know what, in 1930, taking a train from LA to New York was the best way to do it and a great way to do it. But if you want to get there faster, it's not the best way today. And that's kind of how I look at some of the old school stuff. But I don't know. I mean, they've made people better, just not in the easiest way possible, in my opinion, especially in the last year. It was bad for a while, but in the last year, it just looks like a bunch of 10 handicaps who got sick of their job at behind their desk and said, oh, anybody can teach golf. I'm going to give online lessons.
Yeah, I got into a discussion with a guy from Australia. Don't remember his name, so won't say his name. But he was saying, oh, if you slice, you just need to, basically he was saying, drop your right shoulder a ton to swing out to the right. I was like, yeah, that'll do that for sure. But come on, man, like there's so much better ways to do that. You don't need to lower your arms. You don't need to extend your right elbow. You just need to drop and tilt way to the right.
Oh, I know who you're talking about. I have seen that video.
I would agree with you, though, Monty. I think there's always been people on social media over the last, you know, however long. But I feel like in the last year, it has absolutely exploded, gotten much worse. And I used to say, you know, 85% of the information on the internet is really good. It might not be good for you, but it is good information. I don't know what the number is now, because you just see some of the craziest stuff on a daily basis. And I feel like it's these people that have a high follower count.
Yep.
But they don't actually have experience teaching human beings. And they then, one of the things that kills me is they start attacking some of the great coaches in the industry that have moved our industry along. They attack those guys, which is just mind-blowing to me.
We're in a time now where when you're in a debate with people on the internet or on social media, accomplishments and resume actually makes them double down instead of reconsider their position. And this is what I always say. I say, look, to the average golfer, I say this on my social media and on my Instagram lives. Before you do anything, look at who you're listening to. Who is this guy? Because I see some of the worst stuff you could possibly imagine. Things that are going to make people hit it worse and injure themselves. And then I look in the comments, dude, this is awesome.
Yes.
Great tip. I'm going to go try this afternoon. This makes total sense. And I'm like, yeah, those people don't understand. It's not hard to we have something called Google.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you can research who you're listening to. And you know what? I make no bones about that. You know, I say, look, I'm qualified to help you with golf. I hit it farther than anybody at one time. I play golf at the highest levels. I study all of the latest data and science, and I give 2,000 lessons a year. Not going to find too many people with more experience than me, but still, research what I say. It's out there to be found for anybody.
Yeah, you know, and something too, like you said in the comments, you'll often find in the comment section of those types of people where their followers will literally say, well, I will only listen to you. I've listened to you and your tips have helped me. And now I will only listen to you, and everybody else out there is completely wrong, which once again is just crazy to me.
No, I don't do that at all. I'm the opposite.
Yes.
Whenever I give a lesson, it's not, I'm smart, you're dumb, you do what I say. I'm like, if something I say doesn't make sense to you, go see what other people have to say. Here's the thing. When you said 85% of the information, I'm in the other direction. I say only about 10% of it is good, but only that 10% is amazingly good if you find the right people. And talking about comments, I had the most wonderful comment of all time about 2-3 months ago that pretty much sums up people's knowledge and the comments on social media. I put up a real simple drill on how to do something. And the guy's comment was, this is the reason why Tiger said, don't get golf instruction from the internet. And I'm like, okay. And so here was my response. I say, it's funny you say that, because I learned this exact drill listening to Tiger on a driving range. And that was the honest truth. And he deleted his comment, never to be heard from again. So that's a perfect example of the narrative has, some people are stupid, let's be honest.
Yeah.
But most of the problem is ignorance, not stupidity. And there are so many nice and good people out there. I see some guys on social media, they honestly want to help people.
Yep.
They have a fair concept on what they're trying to do, but it looks like one of my videos from 15 years ago where I'm like, I'm saying something good. This is going to help, but there's a little bit of misunderstanding here. And I'll say, look, boss, really good concept. AMG just put out a really good video they got from Gears that will help you understand this a little bit better, and you'll be able to explain it better. And most of the time people say, oh, thanks, Monty. I really appreciate that. But every once in a while, you know, you don't know what the blah, blah, blah you're talking about. All good players do this. And I'm like, all right, you know, because I would run out of time. I never go to other people's hoods and say, you're wrong, this is stupid. The only comments that I leave on social media are like, somebody says something good, and I'm like, this guy knows what he's talking about. You, his followers, should listen to this.
Yeah. Yeah. I try to stay out of some of those dark conversations. It's not helping anybody to engage with some of those people, because no matter what you say, no matter how much proof you give them, they're not going to, again, it's almost like this cult following for some of these people out there. Once they attach themselves to somebody that they like, and let's call it an influencer, right? In today's world.
Right. But you know what? It's not reserved to them.
Yes.
A nameless, long time, big name pro. I put up something. I did a thing on Justin Rose's swing because I really like how neutral his movements are. So I use him to point out a lot of things that golfers should be doing. And it was a brand new video just taken at the Ryder Cup in, you know, 1080 with like 120 FPS. It was like flawless, and it was the perfect angle. And I made a comment about it. And this famous guy said, this is totally misleading and wrong. And then, you can't make this up, he used a 50-year-old grainy video of Jack Nicklaus where the camera moved and specifically didn't use my name, but was specifically attacking what I said and how wrong I was. And I'm just like, I don't know what to say there. So I just left it alone.
Let's get into a little bit of this then. Obviously, when we're coaching in today's world, we have access to a lot of technology.
I want to go on the record first, though.
Go ahead.
I do not avoid the dark corners of the internet.
That's why we love you so much.
I will occasionally engage.
Eric enjoys.
I'm not going to lie. I will occasionally engage. And, you know, and sometimes when I'm doing that, I'm doing it to refine my argument.
Hmm.
And sometimes I'm doing it to talk to the few people who might not have already decided which side of the fence they want to sit on.
Oh, yeah. I'm with you on that.
Yep.
The problem is I leave when two steps later is going to be like, you know what, dude, here's where I teach. Come over and we'll step outside and talk about it. You know, because I get really mad when people just are just asses. Well, you know, what else to say?
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, continue, Tyson.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, we have access to a lot of technology today that helps us with our knowledge of years of teaching and the thousands of hours of teaching lessons and making people better. We now have objective data, right?
Yes.
What parameters, you know, would you tell our listeners if they're getting lessons or if they're thinking about taking lessons, what parameters are the most important for those people to start to understand?
The one that, and like, here's where some of the mistakes I've made is 10 years ago, I didn't realize how ignorant the public, and I'm sorry to say the vast majority of instructors were about how a pressure shift happens. Mm. So I really didn't discuss it.
And not 10 years ago, right now. It's the truth.
I made the mistake 10 years ago not to discuss it enough. And I'm just like, you know what? And this is almost all I talk about now. And it goes back to that fallacy that there's more than one way to swing a golf club. There really isn't, you know? Yeah, you know, if you said Tiger swing like this 15 handicap over here, he'd probably still go out and shoot 71 doing that. But that's not a way to play golf. But
well, it's like, I look at it as like breeds of cats. Most cats look kind of the same. And I'm talking about like house cats, not like lions and tigers and stuff. But like most cats look the same, kind of generally. But they look very different. You got calico cats and those ones without hair.
Exactly. Great analogy. I'm going to start using that. That's a great analogy.
It's all still cats.
Yeah, they're still cats. So like, you know, if you look at Matt Wolf's pressure shift and his wrist graph from P5 to impact, you'd have a hard time discerning it from anybody else's, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, the big deal, this is the one, people say, Monty, what's the one thing that I need to focus on learning better is how a pressure shift actually works. And it's explained so poorly right now. When your arms and hands take the club away, there is a movement of pressure into the right foot. End of story. Okay. It doesn't, I mean, maybe a little flighted wedge, there might not be so much, but if someone's hitting a 5-iron, a full 7, or especially a driver, as soon as you take the club away, that force moves the pressure to the right foot. And sometimes,
and even before that,
absolutely.
Right.
You'll see guys, if you look at my winning long drive in 1992, you'll see before I even take the club away, there's that movement there. And then the second one is every lesson I give, it seems like there are some people that buy it pretty quickly. They think that the pressure movement starting to drift back to the lead side before the end of the backswing is a reverse pivot. Mm. You've got to load they've been told for 100 years, you got to load the right side at the top of the swing. And it's just not what good players do. When you guys know this, when you tell someone to do something they've never done before, the first words out of their mouth is, this feels weird. And then they fight it.
Yep.
So, you know, it is an objective fact. The overwhelming majority of elite golfers, not just tour players, but college, high school, mini tour, whatever, initial shift to the right, drifting back to the left before the downswing starts. And everybody's favorite thing to do is find the one guy that won the PGA championship in 1974 that didn't do what you're saying to prove you're wrong.
Yeah. The one outlier, you know, but you're working with average everyday golfers. Those people can't afford to be an outlier. They need to do what the masses do. And, you know, with teaching with force plates every day, I just couldn't agree with you more. I still think the way that the pressure shift is talked about and force is talked about, it's so confusing, and there's so many different ways. And again, not to name any names, but I've seen some high profile teachers literally within the last few months put content out about some of the force plate data, and it's not accurate what they're saying. And again, these are people that golfers are going to listen to.
Or worse, big name guys who say the force plate stuff is voodoo BS.
That's right.
And it's just an expensive doormat.
Yes. 100%.
And it just doesn't go to that either.
I don't know who you could possibly be talking about there.
And And you know what? It's not just that. It's like I had, let's go to another issue, wrist movement, which to me, this is what I always say to people. If you have a decent setup, a decent understanding of pressure shifting and rotation at the right time, and you understand what to allow to happen, I'm key with those words, in a wrist movement, you'll become a pretty good golfer pretty quickly. You know, if you just understand setup, pressure shift, and wrist movement. I had a guy, the guy is multiple time PGA teacher of the year, okay? And we were discussing impact, and he put up still frames. I believe it was Jordan Spieth and Bryson DeChambeau post impact, where the club,
they swing the same.
Where the club is about this far, and their hands are like outside their body.
Yeah.
And I really made him mad because I found the videos, and it showed in both of those videos that they took a divot deep enough for us to go swimming in, and it made the club stick in the ground as their hands still went forward. And I said, look, man, it's not rocket science. All you have to do is look at a wrist graph to know that the lead wrist from P6 to P8 starts extending in almost every good player. Nobody holds that angle. And his comment was, just like the force plate, I don't need a wrist graph or some fancy doohickey to tell me what the wrists do. I've been teaching golf for 40 years. And I'm like, all right, the argument's over.
Yeah.
I can't win once someone... Well, no, the object is not to win. It's where... Like Eric and I, he says this all the time on Golf WRX. We don't always agree 100% of the time on everything.
Sure.
But when he says something different than what I say, he sees where I'm coming from and how he's interpreting the situation and vice versa for me. And we don't really disagree as much as think there's a different avenue to success there. But we're trying to get the same thing done.
We prioritize something a little bit differently.
Right. Right. And that's where the, and this is what I like to say. The opinion is how you get the individual golfer to the finish line. But how to run the race is, it's pretty objective what needs to happen right now.
There's not that big of a window for a lot of swings. And you talk all the time, I talk all the time about outliers. Average golfers love to use outliers to justify their continued whatever they're doing in their golf swings. And the thing about the difference there is that outlier, Matt Wolf, for example, has been doing that since he was 5, and he hits a few thousand balls a day.
Yep.
This guy plays once or twice a week. He's not going to be as successful as he could be, trying to justify his outlier move just because Matt Wolf does it.
Well, if you want to play that game, you know, a lot of these are a lot of the common faults that we see that are directly inhibiting these guys from hitting it farther and better. You know, you should be allowed to whip it inside because Ray Floyd did. You should be allowed to come over the top because Bruce Litsky was great with no practice. You should be able to early extend because Nicklaus did it. You should be able to sway your pelvis because Colin Montgomery was the best player in Europe for 10 years. You can play that game all day long, which means everybody should stink and stay where they are.
Yep. And to bring it back to what we were talking about at the start of the show, there are a lot of people that justify outliers as almost the entire basis for what they teach.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, you're spot on with that for sure.
Okay. I am going to call out a name here. I wrote an article almost 15 years ago, and I said, here is the problem with golf instruction. Instead of teaching the commonalities, there's so much teaching of the latest outlier young star. And I said, there's a young star on the PGA Tour right now. Nobody knows who he is, relatively speaking. He's going to win a golf tournament and a big golf tournament pretty soon. And Monday morning, all the talking heads are going to say, we need to copy this. And about 10 months later, Dustin Johnson won the AT&T. And Michael Breed was on his show Monday morning saying, and I quote, the reason Dustin Johnson hits it so far and is so consistently straight while hitting it far is because this allows him not to have to manipulate the club face. As soon as I saw that, I went directly to the driving range, literally took a shower, went to the driving range. And if there were the big driving range where I used to teach, maybe 50 people hitting balls, 30 of them were going like this, not getting it airborne or hitting low left hooks.
Since we're an audio medium, obviously flexing the lead wrist a lot at the top of the backswing, bowing the lead wrist.
Yeah. And then it was, let's copy Rory's double hip stall. Let's copy Sergio's lag. Let's copy Hideki Matsuyama's 4-week pause at the top. The irony of this is I have been on tour ranges standing 5 feet away when Sergio said, you know what? I'm not launching the ball high enough. I need to unload a little earlier. And Hideki saying, I actually had a conversation with him through his interpreter about this for about 30 seconds. All of his gyrations on great results, he was reacting to the pause was too long. It threw off his sequence. And I have visually seen him twice on the range, still trying to pause, but trying to diminish it so he doesn't fire his lower body and get his upper body stuck. Because that's what he's, I asked him, I go, when you're reacting to a stuck feeling when you pause too long and the hips race out, and where the ball goes is irrelevant. And he said, yeah, you know, he goes, I don't know why everybody makes fun of me. I'm not reacting to the shot. I'm just like you'll see guys hit good shot when they let go of it with their trail hand. The shot's often a little bit thin right next to the hole, but their sequence was off, so it felt funny.
Yeah, and I think we all know, you know, if you've taught long enough, that things sort of come and go, right? There's many things that came in vogue, and probably for the exact reason you just talked about, Monty. Somebody wins and they do something, so teachers go out and try to copy it and teach it. And then the more they do that, the more they realize it doesn't work for most people. It sort of goes by the wayside, right? And I don't think that's going to go away anytime soon. To sort of wrap this conversation up here, I think the reality of this conversation is it's probably going to get worse. Social media is just going to continue to grow and get bigger. More and more people are going to continue to put content out there and gain followers. And that seems to be what people care about today. It's making them money and gaining popularity. Well,
I care about that too, but
sure.
But just to you know, make the last point on this, when I won the World Long Driving Championship, I was 6'2", 180 pounds. I'm still the second smallest guy to win it. I'm not 180 anymore. People are like, you're a small guy. You beat all the Neanderthals. Tell me what you're doing. What's your secret? And even then I knew better. And I'm like, well, what works for me is not going to work for anybody else. I was just born to hit the ball farther, like Carl Lewis. I'm dating myself. Carl Lewis was born to run faster than everybody. I was born to hit the ball farther than everybody. And if I tell you what I do, it would make you worse.
I love that. Love that. So,
yep. And on social media, nobody wants to be wrong. So people fall into a camp. They have some early success. They want to stick with and defend that camp or whatever group they've kind of chosen to align themselves with, come hell or high water, because to admit that, oh, maybe that stopped working, or maybe that one thing was good, but the rest of it, not so much. They'd have to kind of admit to themselves that they were wrong and move on and look for more good information. So it's a natural kind of human reaction.
I want to be part of the group that is like, you know what? Let's figure out the easiest way to hit a golf ball far and straight. And whatever that is, let's do that.
Yep. Same.
Yeah. I think you and I and Tyson and Jason, who's not here today, I think we're in that camp, and we know the other people that are in that group, and we're just going to kind of keep pushing that direction. You've come out with, by way of people finding you, Monty, you've come out with a 30 days to 300. You have your own website with a lot of video content that's very good. A lot of fact-based, measurement-based, objective information that's good. 30 days to 300 yards is your most recent one. Tell us about that. Tell us where people can find you.
Well, I've come to understand that 30 days has been a little bit misleading to some people. It's essentially,
but it's a sexier title.
Right. You know, essentially it's 40 plus years of knowledge that I've gained hitting it far myself, playing good golf myself, studying the data and teaching golf for the last 15 years on what drills and ideas work. Okay. And out of the 30, like 20 of them are just kind of easy ways to get certain movements in the swing done and for your body to understand what these proper movements feel like. And then I'm very specific on a few of them. I go, today, the one we're going to do, this is not right. This is not the right way to do it. Nobody good does this. However, the feel of doing this is going to show you how far off the way you do it feels. And we're trying to find a middle ground here in between this other extreme that's also not correct and the extreme that you currently do to try and meet in the middle somewhere. And that's what I think is not done enough is there are always two things, two discussions. And some people think discussion A is what's correct. Some people think discussion B is what's correct. And the truth is, you have to have both of them.
Yep.
Discussion A, here's what we're actually trying to accomplish. Here's what actually happens in a good swing. Discussion B, what concept and idea do we have to personally perform to get to A? And some people will only teach A, saying, if you don't know what's right, you're never going to do it. And some people only teach B and say, you know, it's not about positions and mechanics, about athleticism and feel. And I'm like, if you have one without the other, you're pretty much going to fail.
Yep. So where can they find that? Because you talk about club face control and starting the ball in line, because distance without direction is not all that helpful.
That was my complaint. It's on rebelliongolf.com. That's my website. And I have other videos, like one video specifically describes how most, like, I want to say, you know, Scott Couch is great. I'm sure you guys have seen it, the three different tour releases.
Yeah.
And in my opinion, two of them are very difficult for the average golfer.
Absolutely.
So I say the most popular release on the tour, the one that's probably going to be the easiest one for you to do, here's how to do it. Here's what actually happened. But anyways, and that's where the video is. And it's, and what I said about the current speed systems that are out there, they work. I'm not saying they're bad. People struggle because they increase their club head speed 5 or 10% and they're not doing it along with club face control. Then they get out there and they block the ball 100 yards offline because, as we know, all practice swings, the club comes in wide open. And then they start to slow back down to the norm so they can square up. I took a different approach. I said, let's learn how to square up first from here to here, then let's speed that up.
Yep.
Nice. Love that. Monty, where can people find you on social media?
You know what? I used to be really active on YouTube. The AMG guys called me the OG because, I mean, 15, 18 years ago, I was in the park in cargo shorts and t-shirts with my newborn son going, here's what I think. I'm a long drive champion. Here's what I think about the swing. And I didn't know anything. Apparently, I said some things that were counter what everybody thought that turned out to be right. And that's how I, you know, gained my client base. So, but I don't post on YouTube much anymore because, quite honestly, the effort that you have to put in on YouTube to get out of it, the work you put into it, is just too much. So I basically only post on Instagram now. And plus, we're in an era where almost nobody is going to watch a 5, 10, 15, 20, 30 minute video, but they'll watch a 30 second clip where I have Bryson DeChambeau and I go, the way you can hit the ball farther is make sure you do this. And I show him swing and it's 20 seconds and people will watch that.
Yep.
And it's at Monty Scheinblum.
All right.
Awesome.
By the way, Lee Trevino won the 1974 PGA Championship at Tanglewood, which is a course I've played in North Carolina. So not the best random example of a year that you made up in your mind, but, you know, hey.
Nice.
It was a good PGA Championship.
Nice.
Anyway. All right.
Awesome. Monty,
thanks for joining us.
Thanks for joining us. Truly appreciate it.
I appreciate you guys having me. This is always fun.
Absolutely.
All right. Take care. Remember, you can find us at thespinaxis.com and on social media at thespinaxis. Have a great day.